This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Ultimate HA7 Joint Formula from Purity Products. Ultimate HA7 features the joint-boosting benefits of hyaluronic acid. HA works like a shock absorber, helping to cushion and soothe your joints. Plus, this HA also hydrates your skin. It's powerful support for your joints, cartilage, skin, and connective tissues. So call 800-983-1154 and get a full-size bottle of HA7 for only $9. And you also get free shipping. Call now to claim your $9 trial bottle of HA7 with free shipping. 1-800-983-1154. These move fast, so call now. 1-800-983-1154. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, something that I look forward to every week, and I hope you do as well. It's an opportunity to field questions, all and sundry, related to intelligent medicine. It's quite a broad net in which we capture questions about nutrition, vitamins, minerals, supplements, diet, exercise, high-tech medical interventions, and we dish some medical advice. So we're together today with Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence. She's got a master's degree in the field of nutrition, in addition to having an RD, registered dietitian training, and is eminently qualified to help me field these questions.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
So, how you doing?
Okay, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And before we get to questions, radioprogram@AOL.com is the place for questions. Would it surprise you if I told you that one of this week's headlines is higher consumption of sugary beverages linked with increased risk of mortality?
Ah.
I.e., sugar kills you.
Yeah. Sugar kills you. Before that, it rusts you. It glycates you, which is another way of saying rust, kind of. Sure, think about a can of soda, a 12-ounce can of soda. That's 10 to 12 teaspoons of sugar.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so here's what they said. This is, by the way, from, not the most reputable place, Harvard University, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet the guy who wrote that got in by cheating. You know, his parents.
His parents bribed
somebody. Right. Okay.
Oh my.
The reputation of colleges is being tarnished.
Yeah.
Anyway, they say here the more sugar sweetened beverages people consumed, the greater their risk of premature death, particularly death from cardiovascular disease, and to a lesser extent from cancer. This is a pretty big study. They looked at, 80,000 women, 38,000 men over a period of 1980 to 2014 for the women, 1986 to 2014 for the men. And, they also adjusted for major diet and lifestyle factors. You might say, well, yeah, people drink soda. They're less careful.
They're drinking soda. They're having pizza and French fries and.
Yeah, other stuff. This is the difficulty with these studies. They say they adjusted for other major diet and lifestyle factors. So just they try to isolate on sodas. Now, recently they did a study on eggs saying there was a slightly higher risk of dying with eggs. But then, you know, you could say, well, maybe the people who eat a lot of eggs, maybe they're having, bacon and eggs for breakfast, or they're, poor quality, chemical-laden sausages with their eggs. So maybe, but they say they isolated on eggs. So this is, part of the problem with these studies. But they say there was a particularly strong link between drinking sugary beverages and increased risk of early death from cardiovascular disease. 31% higher risk of early death from cardiovascular disease. And each additional serving per day. So for every soda, you get a 10% increased higher risk of cardiovascular-related death. So you have one soda, 10% higher, then 20%, then 30%, then 40%. When you drink two or more servings per day, you have a 31% higher risk of early death from cardiovascular disease. Right. So is it really the cholesterol that's killing us?
Well, here's the thing. When you drink a soda, it does all kinds of dangerous biochemical things in your body. First of all, it will raise your triglycerides.
Which is weird.
Triglycerides, yeah.
Or fat. They're fat.
Fat.
Yeah.
That's an independent risk factor.
Sugar makes your body make fat.
Yes, it does. Sugar makes your body make fat with the process of a higher blood sugar and subsequent higher insulin. And that insulin then is also causing inflammation in the body. So mm-hmm. there are several mechanisms. The inflammation, the high triglycerides, and the inflammation and high blood sugar will also oxidize the cholesterol, the LDL.
So, honest question for you. In the last couple of years, how many sugary sodas have you had?
In the last couple of years?
Yeah.
I haven't had any. Yeah. I might have had two or three Diet Cokes.
That's sort of me. They're just like, yeah, sometimes
I just sometimes I want to eat a soda like that.
I'm on vacation, you know, I've like, you know, gone through the airports and like the plane and the thing, and I arrive and I just say, just, you know, I'll have a Caesar salad, but just give me a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
You know, like, because it's like,
I just want it.
Yeah, it's like, right.
I don't do this too often.
Right.
It's all right.
So I don't think there are any studies that show that two Diet Cokes per year increase your risk of anything.
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Except liking it too much.
Liking it too much, yes.
Yeah.
Now, that is a risk. That is a risk. It was about 12, 15 years ago, I was a Diet Coke fanatic.
Right.
I wasn't having 12 cans a day.
Yeah.
I was having a can a day, maybe.
You know what's interesting is that, and I'm not accusing you of this, because you're one of the rare nutritionists that doesn't have an eating disorder.
No,
I'm not looking. A lot of nutritionists listen to this, they're going to feel offended. But frankly, there's a higher risk of having a nutritional, you know, kind of a...
Or some kind of food problem.
Some kind of food problem.
Food issue.
Yeah. But there is among anorexics and bulimics, they guzzle diet soda in the belief that they're getting their sweet craving addressed while getting zero calories. It's very harmful.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
Very harmful, very dangerous. And it's not just about the calories.
Yep.
It's what it does to raise your insulin.
And it affects the microbiome.
And the microbiome. Yeah. That phosphoric acid is terrible for the bones.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
So I mean, I think we're preaching to the choir. I think it's pretty obvious what we're talking about.
Another thing that having sugary soda every day is it depletes your magnesium and your B vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
Two very important nutrients for your heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as well.
Right.
To help lower homocysteine, you need your B vitamins, you need magnesium for your heart. It's an anti-nutrient. All those public service ads on the subway about choose water or unsweetened beverages.
Some people don't know what we're talking about because in their locality, they're not seeing that. That's a New York City initiative.
Right. It's to stave off obesity, diabetes,
and remember, New York is very progressive. New York is the first place that banned smoking in bars. I mean, what a concept. Yeah. You go to a bar and you can't smoke a cigarette? Come on!
Yeah.
Well, that's New York.
Yeah.
And it's actually spread worldwide. It's a great thing.
It is a great thing.
Because I used to work in a bar and
I don't reek anymore of cigarettes.
I used to, I had to take, you know, clean my clothes because I was a waiter, it was like I was smoke laden.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. I worked as a waitress myself, so it was ridiculous.
No, there's something we have in common, yeah.
Yeah.
That helps us deal with patients, I think.
Yeah.
What's your order, please? Let's see, I'll have...
How can I help you?
Let's see, how can I help you today? I'll have a CVC, I'll have a SMAC, I'll have a vitamin D level.
And, yeah.
You know. Okay, coming right up.
A SIBO test, especially after all that soda.
Right.
So, could be another reason for SIBO being on the rise.
A lot of gastrointestinal complaints, yeah.
Sugar.
Yeah.
Big change in microbiome that way.
That and acid blockers and, of course, overuse of antibiotics, yeah.
Yeah, and poor diet, with having that soda.
Yep.
So, try to skip it, folks.
Yeah, there's this...
You know, back to when I was having a Diet Coke every day 12, 15 years ago, that was a tough habit to break.
Mm-hmm.
But I moved over to seltzer because sometimes it's that carbonation that you really want on your taste buds. It tastes really good. I love fizzy water.
I'm a seltzer addict, and I guzzle seltzer.
Yeah.
And
Do you have that SodaStream?
I have SodaStream.
Yeah.
And
it's a good machine.
It's good. And what I lately, to make it a little sweeter, you know, I'll confess, is that sometimes I will put a teaspoon of reacted magnesium powder in there.
Oh, nice.
Orthomolecular makes a nice one. And it has, it's a my magnesium, plus it's got stevia in it, which is a sweet taste. Mm-hmm. And it incentivizes me to drink. When I work out, I'll put, you know, some ice and some water and a scoop of
The magnesium
reactive
powder.
Magnesium powder into my water bottle when I go spinning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you spin, you just, you got your puddle of sweat beneath you.
Yeah.
Yeah, be careful when you get off your bike, otherwise I just slipped on my sweat. Mm-hmm. But you really need to hydrate. So I'll go through a full water bottle with, you know, a lot of magnesium, because magnesium is helpful for muscle.
Yeah.
It supports muscle
metabolism. And it's an electrolyte.
And it reduces the chance of cramps, mm-hmm. muscle cramps. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's our take on kind of like another duh story. But
duh story is right.
Hey,
what's happening there? They regurgitated that one, but it could be that we're used to seeing that in New York.
No, that's a brand new study. That's a
it
March.
Is a brand new
that's
study.
A March study.
Oh my!
That's brand new out of Harvard. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, so I would say, been saying, been
that's
saying,
right. been saying. We have an email from Larry. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, for years now, I've been using xylitol granules to sweeten my coffee and tea.
Well, there's another way to sweeten
coffee and tea. I've noticed something new to me, which costs less, I thought I'd order, but I decided to check with you first. It's called erythritol. It also claims to be low glycemic. Mm-hmm. Any information would be appreciated.
What they sometimes do is combine xylitol with erythritol.
They do.
There's a product by the people who make Spry gum and clear nasal spray that comes in little packets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, actually, I don't use it very much, but I used it last night because I made a dessert. It was like, I had some very tart berries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were
they needed something. They were a little too tart.
So, and then I put coconut milk on them, mm-hmm. and then I opened one little packet of Truvia.
Truvia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it hits a combination of erythritol, which is very sweet.
Yeah.
And xylitol, and it spiked it up a little bit.
There you go. Yeah.
So, is erythritol safe?
Pretty much. It's a sugar alcohol like xylitol.
Side effect could be if you take
laxative.
Tons of it, a laxative
effect. So, Larry, the xylitol is, I would say, more beneficial because it's good for dental health. If you're having that, I would probably prefer xylitol to erythritol, but I don't see really any harm with the erythritol. But overdoing any sugar alcohols, that includes sorbitol, maltitol, all of those, can have a laxative effect. And if it doesn't, it can cause some crampy, bloaty, gassy kind of symptoms.
It appears to be very safe. They've done a lot of toxicity studies on animals where they've fed them like the equivalent of pounds of human consuming pounds of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your body can't digest it, so it passes unchanged through the system. It doesn't get absorbed.
Right.
It may have an impact on the intestinal bacteria. So, for example, the FODMAP diet.
Yeah.
The P in FODMAP stands for polyols, mm-hmm. of which xylitol and erythritol are polyols.
Yes,
so
the
if
sugar
you have somebody who comes
are.
With a lot of gas and bloating or IBS mm-hmm. with a diarrheal
predominance,
then we would say follow the FODMAP diet and don't have that.
Right, right. Exactly.
So there's not a lot that gets... there's not a lot. I mean, some gets absorbed, I guess. And it says here, according to this one report I'm reading, this some gets absorbed in the bloodstream.
Fruits contain small amounts of sugar alcohols.
Mm-hmm.
They're especially likely being absorbed.
Pears have sorbitol in them.
Yeah. Yeah. But the erythritol, I think, is pretty innocuous as well. Again, don't overdo it. I think the upper tolerable limit in terms of grams of sugar alcohol before most people start to get crampy, bloaty, gassy, and then diarrhea is about anywhere from 20, maybe 22 grams. Some people can have 25 grams. You would find this amount in, say, a dietetic bar, a low-carb bar that generally relies on sugar alcohols for sweetening if they're not already using stevia.
So there's this, there's some calories, but very little calories.
Very little. And it's, again, it's washing on through.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's washing on through.
So we like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to have, Larry. All right. We have an email from Pauline. Wow. Well, let's try to make a long story short. Pauline was admitted to a hospital for some pain on the left side of her chest. Everything came back negative except for a growth on my spleen.
Negative is good in medicine.
Oh, yeah.
Coming back negative.
Yeah.
There's, in other words, it's funny, when they reported on Trump's health, he got a doctor.
Uh-huh.
It looks like he sent one of his assistants to the doctor's office. They rushed out with a prescription pad or, you know, with some blank piece of paper, and the doctor scribbled on the prescription pad, Donald Trump is the healthiest patient I've ever seen. All his tests are positive.
Oh, no. That's
not very doctor-like.
No, that's not doctor speak.
Yeah, that's not, because
no.
All of positive is like, yeah, it's optimistic, it's positive. No, positive means
everything is negative.
Means blood in the stool, high cholesterol.
Right, positive for all those things.
Bad.
Right.
Okay,
right.
But anyway, she said the tests were negative.
Yeah,
negative is good.
Negative except for a growth on my spleen. The doctor
which could be benign.
Which could be benign, because the doctor said
the cancer of the spleen is unusual.
Okay.
You know, it's not, you know, seeing a growth on the liver, you know, a little bit more concerning on the kidney,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's, you know, already more likely to be problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the doctor that discharged me from the hospital said the spleen is not a very important organ and nothing else. But now my doctor is seeing this.
Wow, that's really good bedside manner.
Wow, it's not important.
Wait a minute. So the connotation was, don't worry about it. And in any case, even if it was a problem,
We'll
take it out.
We'll take it out. It's not important.
Isn't that kind of like a double message that you leave with a patient? Is that like, it's not a problem, but the spleen's not a very important organ?
Yeah, so we could harvest it.
Yeah.
In a dystopian world.
So the answer is, there are probably a couple of million people in the United States, if mm-hmm. not more, I'm mm-hmm. just ballparking it, who don't have a spleen.
Yeah.
And why don't they have a spleen? A couple of reasons. Main reason
is car accident.
When you hit the steering wheel, your spleen is right there. The spleen has been likened to, they say that when you lacerate your spleen, when you tear it and you're trying to fix it, it's like trying to sew a wet paper bag full of wet sawdust.
Oh, my.
It just does not.
You can't sew that.
You can't sew that. So you just take out the spleen, it's gone. The other reason to take out a spleen is for a condition of high platelets called thrombocytosis,
mm-hmm.
Which is an over proliferation of your platelets.
Uh-huh.
And one way to stop is to take out your spleen.
Mm.
So that's another reason a lot of people are... So people do fine,
mm-hmm.
but they have some faults with their immune system because the spleen may regulate response to certain bacteria.
Yeah.
So they're more prone to pneumococcal infections with pneumonia.
Okay.
So they should all take the Pneumovax. They must take the Pneumovax.
Okay.
They also are more prone to more serious salmonella infections. They have to be careful that they don't have any bad egg salad or, you know, exotic food.
Yeah.
But they can be fine
mm-hmm.
otherwise. It's interesting that it's not a superfluous organ, but it's an organ that you can do pretty darn well without.
Yeah, okay.
And of the, you know, talk mm-hmm. about big organs,
mm-hmm.
you can't live without a liver. You can't live without a pancreas.
Yeah.
But you can live without
a spleen.
And you can't live without
two
kidneys, or actually if your kidneys are on the fritz, you can get dialysis.
Right.
But, what he's saying is partially true, but like,
mm-hmm.
what's wrong with that doctor?
What's wrong with that doctor? So,
is that what?
Pauline says, now that my doctor finally saw the result of the spleen test, he's concerned, but we've not decided what to do. What are your insights? Please give me some insight.
I have no
Should
idea.
I have my spleen removed?
You got a coin, so we flip it. I mean, I don't know because I don't have eyes on that situation.
Right.
So I can't.
Yeah. Pauline also says she has irritable bowel syndrome. She's careful
That's
with what she eats.
Unrelated.
It is unrelated to whatever is going on with your spleen.
It's in the tummy, but it's not a different part of the tummy.
Right. So, Pauline, we're very glad that all your tests came back negative.
Yeah, yeah. Negative.
Whatever pain syndrome was happening negative to you good. At the time.
Yeah.
So, okay, yeah. I've heard of people being taken to the ER with terrible abdominal pain only to find out it was gas, like really, really bad gas.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's really something. Anyway, Pauline, we hope you feel better. Okay. Oh, here's one.
Oh, and she had left-sided pain, which the concern is might be a heart attack, but she might have had gas, which if it accumulates under the left diaphragm, it can sort of refer up into the chest and feel like a heart attack. And you have to pay attention to that. You know?
You do. Better safe than sorry. Yeah. Then don't sit home with that one.
Then you go quickly through. It's called ROMI, rule out MI. You know, the abbreviation is ROMI. Mm. And it's just like a certain, you know, you do certain blood tests, troponin, you know, we'll do an EKG. And then, you know, then pretty much they say, it's not a heart attack. It's something else.
Mm-hmm.
They can rule out.
They can rule it out. They could say it came back negative.
They can rule it, but you can't rule it out.
Right. Right. You can't rule it out. Right. Okay. We have an email from Steve. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what are the benefits or dangers of long-term aspirin use for stroke prevention? If it is a benefit, what does it actually do?
Well, in the news lately is the news that aspirin for prevention is out. For general prevention, it's out. However, that doesn't mean that in certain people who are high risk, mm-hmm. who've had strokes, had heart attacks, who have very high amounts of plaque or very high risk,
mm-hmm.
maybe they benefit from aspirin. But for an ordinary person who's at low risk, the downsides of aspirin are mostly gastrointestinal. It will cause gastrointestinal bleeding.
Right. Ulcer, rectal bleed, if taken long-term
If you have hemorrhoids, they might bleed more severely.
Yeah. They could cause tinnitus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have ringing in your ears before and now you suddenly do,
You
might blame your aspirin.
Now, there are actually some long-term side benefits to aspirin. Aspirin may reduce the risk for certain cancers.
Yeah.
It's actually been...
Anti-inflammatory.
Anti-colon cancer. Pretty mm-hmm. well demonstrated. Mm-hmm. Also, maybe anti-prostate cancer. There's some buzz about that for prostate cancer prevention.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, is it of benefit? What does it actually do? Like its mechanism of action?
It's a cyclooxygenase inhibitor. It inhibits something in the chain of reactions that lead to sticky platelets, basically, and
so
blood
clots.
So
it takes care of the platelets.
Yeah.
Pretty much that way. Okay. And Steve says, thank you for your tireless effort to educate.
We're tireless.
Yeah,
I mean,
tireless.
Hey, we've had a whole long day. At the end of the day, it's something I look forward to. It's kind of like my energy boost in the afternoon is to answer the questions. So
thank you
for your questions.
Thank you, Steve.
They keep us on our toes.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I'm going to write about this for the newsletter because it's a question here, but it reminds me of something I wrote before on aspirin as well. You don't want to self-prescribe, Steve. If your doctor is recommending aspirin mm-hmm. therapy for you, that's between you and your doctor. But
right.
a lot of people are self-prescribing when they shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean...
Especially for primary prevention.
I guess, I mean, one thing to have is maybe aspirin as part of your emergency kit. If you think you're maybe having a heart attack, pop an aspirin, call 911.
Before you go on a, yeah.
Call 911, then pop an aspirin.
Right.
You know, because time is myocardium, they say.
Exactly.
And the longer, if you're having a heart attack, the more damage will occur to your heart unless they can do something. And now they can do things fairly quickly. They can, you know, get the blood returning to the heart more quickly through revascularization. They'll put you in the cath lab and open things up. But it actually has been shown that if you are having a heart attack, then taking aspirin can reduce the damage. However, how do you know? You might be having like an ulcer.
Mm.
And if you take an aspirin, it's actually the opposite of what you need
right.
to do, you know.
And when if you think you're having a heart attack and you take that aspirin, are you swallowing that down with water or are you chewing that up and swallowing it? What's the advice? Isn't it you chew it up and swallow it? And that could hurt your ulcer more, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
Unless you've eaten. All right. Never mind.
Don't take the time to look for the water. Just take the aspirin.
Just take the aspirin.
You know, it's in the,
yeah.
But the 20 seconds it takes to get to the sink and find the glass, it's like...
Right. Okay. All right. We have an email from Mike.
And we're out of time for this part.
But really?
Give us a preview of what...
You're kidding!
I guess it's that time flies when you're having fun phenomenon.
I had an EBT heart scan. I had calcium scores. Now I had another test and my score's zero. I'm confused.
Wait. Oh, is it two calcium scoring tests?
Yes. And now another test and the score is zero.
Oh, okay. Well, let's tackle that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mudin. And it's a weekly Q&A with Layla. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. And we'll be back to answer more in just a few moments. Stay with us for part two.